Seeing everything is theater, every single show, controlling all the views to generate their own. I can never let it go when it's everywhere I turn, always putting all this doubt into everything I've known. Consumed and a little bit confused when you listen to the news. They giving you the spin and never giving you the truth. Algorithms are predicting every single thing you do while controlling every issue we are interested in too. Now this'll be the end of us. They watching us every minute, so we never honest. They want us crossing a line just to get them off us. It's pushing us to a limit we ain't ever wanted. Yeah, with all eyes on me, they look but they might not see.
Hello to all of the members out there. Thank you for joining me for another episode here today. We're going to have a great chat about the world, about vaccines, about some of the transhumanist agendas and everything in between. I'm very excited. I've got a special guest on here today, which you may recall joined us on the General Knowledge podcast back in November to speak about, you know, technology, EMF, Wi-Fi, the advancements of technologies in that regard. But I'm excited to get her back here today to have a one-on-one chat with her about some different topics and some of the larger themes that we discuss. I first heard of her through John Hamer when they were writing their book, Welcome to the Masquerade. So I'm pleased to welcome to the show Shannon Rowan. Shannon, thanks for taking the time all the way up in Northern California this afternoon.
Thanks, Ethan. Yeah, I'm really excited to be on today.
It's exciting to have you on. I first become sort of involved in the EMF scene back in, I would say, essentially when the 5G rollout was coming out. Obviously, I've been very skeptical of tech and mass surveillance and stuff like that. But in terms of the health movement in regards to it, I sort of went back there in 2019, 2018, 2019, when they were beginning the 5G rollout. And, you know, you meet some fantastic speakers in that realm. But I found a lot of the time, you know, they are very well versed in that, but they don't really go down the rabbit hole too much deeper than the technology itself. Whereas for yourself, Shannon, you've gone down the rabbit hole 100 times like we have here on the website. And I'm interested to sort of unpeel that here on the podcast today. And you've got a new book out, which we're going to have a chat about and lead into some bigger questions. But I'm interested in terms of yourself, you know, how did this research journey sort of all begin for you? Obviously, you've done books. You're a woman of many hats, geopolitical author, researcher, you're a dancer, photographer. You even design, you know, some of the artwork for your books and have a publishing service and everything like that. So in terms of, for people that have just listened on the General Knowledge podcast and have been familiar with your work on the Wi-Fi refugee, for the bigger stuff, like, where did this journey begin for you, and was there any key topics that awoke you? Was it Wi-Fi itself, or was there something else in terms of your journey?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't feel like I had like one big aha moment necessarily. It's sort of one thing building on the other. I was definitely like, it was funny you're asking this now, because just before I came up to get on the show, my partner started laughing because I'm always like questioning things. And he said, man, you must have been such a problem for your teachers at school. And he's just laughing. And I really was. They hated it when I raised my hand. I raised my hand a lot. I don't know why I'm like this, honestly. I feel like I was born to question. I don't know. I'm one of 7 children, and I don't think anybody else in my family is like me. So I just couldn't accept a lot of the answers. They didn't make sense to me. You know, just all these rote answers to important questions, things that just didn't, I didn't think were logical. And I think I've been accused of being very logical at times. And I've just always been a creative person. Like you said, I've done a lot of different things. I've had a lot of different jobs in the past, you know, and always pursued creative endeavors. So I had been a photojournalist. I was first in, you know, just photography and art in school. And then I got into photojournalism and writing and editorial writing. So I have like that writing background and that questioning background too that comes with journalism, at least if you're a real journalist. I also had my eyes opened, like because I worked in a lot of different sectors, I think that also opened my eyes to like the behind the scenes of a lot of different kinds of jobs and seeing the manipulation. Like I worked in advertising in commercial photography and saw how much we were lied to, you know, the deception involved in that. And it really, like, it really turned me away from it. So I got out of that thinking, oh, I'll go into journalism and, you know, do something good. I always was trying to, you know, do something good in the world. You know, I just kind of had that, I guess some people say like high moral compass or something, you know? And so I'm here in a very idealistic, in my 20s, of course, a lot of people are. And so I was into like environmentalism and, you know, whatever I could do to help the world and help people. And so I got into that, right. And then found that they also used a lot of deception in journalism. So it was just the one thing after the other. And then the Wi-Fi thing was a kind of big wake up moment because I thought, okay, so they've been lying about the health effects of this when I got personally so like, you know, extremely affected and then found out I wasn't the only one. And then realizing how much we're lied to there, and then along the way, also disenchanted with the medical system, just through personal experience, you know, observing what happens also to my friends and family, some of which died at the hands of these doctors because of their treatments. Yeah. You know, so I kind of branched off into like studying herbalism and diet and, you know, other natural ways of healing and found a lot more success with that. So I haven't actually touched pharmaceutical medicines or had treatments in 20 years. I don't know many people like that, even that use the so-called alternative medicines who actually don't, you know, sometimes take an aspirin or something. Like, yeah. But I just don't touch it at all. So.
No, it's fantastic. Yep.
Yeah. And then I met John Hamer online, you know, because he kind of pushed me further into investigating some of these things because of his work when I discovered that just by chance and then got in touch with him. And then we start to collaborate together. We hit it off, just, you know, understanding each other really well and having some similar writing style and, you know, just, so we started working together actually on a different book we still haven't finished. We ended up when the Corona hoax started, we are like, we have to kind of like rethink this and write this other book. But we were writing about transhumanism initially and the EMF topic kind of interwoven with the transhumanist topic. I mean, transhumanism is like it's a topic in all of these interrelated ones because that's kind of like an end goal.
For sure.
I think. Yeah. So, but I think like it's interesting you kind of mentioned that, you know, some people just don't, they'll know a lot about one topic, but not a lot about others. And I think because we're really encouraged in our societies to compartmentalize and to specialize, and that really serves the people in control, because that way we don't see the bigger picture and we're just like cogs in the machine that they set up for us, right? So that's what happens. Somebody may be very intelligent but very specialized, even when they're questioning things. And so it's really difficult for a lot of people to be able to just conceptualize and see a bigger picture. And I think that's where I somehow, like I said, with my background and trying out different careers and always having been questioning kind of person, that I'm able to see a bigger picture and make connections. And I think that's what John Hamer is a lot like that. You mean that way as well. And I think you are too. So.
Yeah. Yep. And I think, you know, and we'll get into some of these bigger topics, but, you know, I think in a sense, we all sort of connect and find each other maybe by chance, maybe it's, you know, in a sense, not to be over dramatic, but a destiny kind of thing. But, you know, we all go through our own paths. But it's interesting I asked that question because, you know, every time I hear the story of people, which we love sort of hearing here just to sort of set the tone, it's always very similar. You know, they didn't really fit well with school and certain experiences in the world sort of shaped their understanding of the deceptions, you know. And it's interesting for you because you sort of had a similar journey to me in the sense of wanting to become a journalist. And then if you want to go into that world, you've got to learn how to do what they do, you know, learning how to use fear to induce the populace and how to create public opinion instead of reinforce it. You know, these are the things they teach at school and tell you these are the skills you've got to learn. And it's completely against, like I was doing, I've told this story before, but I was doing a sort of a journalism traineeship at the Queensland State Library here. And we were in the newsroom and they were pitching ideas, everyone time to pitch ideas. And because the Queensland state government funded the program, any type of news story that was critical of them, oh no, we can't run that because they're funding the program. Even if it was something as simple as public transport costs are too high. People, I can walk around the city and interview people about the cost of living and why public transport costs keep going up. Oh no, because the government runs this program. Do you have any other ideas? Maybe you can head down to the LGBTQ rally or something, you know? It's and at the time it was like, I see how this goes, and it, you almost sort of, I almost romanticized this idea of what a journalist really was, you know, someone asking hard questions, someone at the forefront of keeping democracy a democracy. And then you sort of learn, oh man, it's definitely not the case. So I can see how that experience on your end also would have shaped that, because it definitely shaped me because they're really the heart and glue, the media and just this entire conglomerate. They keep everything together. They keep all of these falsehoods together. They're the glue, because if they were telling people, look what happened during the Vietnam War, if they were showing people what was really going on, people would react bad. They wouldn't want that. And so they are the ones that keep all of this system going. And so once you go to the heart of it, you definitely are taken from that. And, you know, it is fascinating to hear, you know, just how you sort of have got involved and how we meet. And we'll talk about some of those bigger questions later on. But I wanted to focus, as a perfect lead into some of those bigger questions, talking about your new book, Shots Fired, Vaccine Weapons, Medical Tyranny and the War Against Humanity. So this has recently come out last month, just a few weeks ago. And this is essentially an expose on all of vaccines and medical history in itself. So things like germ theory, the true origins of diseases, you know, things that we're interested here on the website. Can you tell us a little bit about this book that you've done? Because now we've heard your story, how you've sort of got to the point and you're working with John Hamer, but now you've sort of started to go out on your own as an author, you know, exposing these types of topics. So tell us a little bit about this book, how it come about and what it is all about.
Yeah, actually, I could credit my father with kind of getting me interested in doing this book, because he thought that I should focus on the vaccine issue. I mean, as more information came out after John and I published our book, I mean, the one who wrote sort of the vaccine chapters, and I had focused on that for our research, you know, in our book, and also about viruses and germ theory. So I'd done a lot of research already, but there were so many more things kind of coming to light since we published. And, you know, he thought, well, that's, you know, and I thought at first, okay, I'll do like a short book about it, you know, and then I couldn't because there's too many.
Short book, it's 820 pages. What are you talking about?
Well, 60 pages of that is the end notes. It's like 2,000 references.
Okay.
So it's only
700.
It's only 700. I can't remember exactly. But yeah. well, and so I did an outline for it. I still thought for some reason I could do it shorter. But as I was researching for each chapter even more, I found so many more interesting things to add that it just grew and grew. And I really could have, you know, gone further with a lot of these topics and written more, you know.
Of course.
I didn't want to just say these shots are bad, because there are books like that coming out now, too. I think that's great. But again, that myopic, you know, compartmentalized view is not what I do. And so I wanted to piece together the big, you know, to make people see the bigger picture and showing how like this has been repeated through history. When the vaccine issue, you know, when vaccines were introduced and the germ theory idea, and how that's led to where we are now with this tyranny that, you know, that we're living under, that is all made possible because of our beliefs and our conditioning and indoctrination into germ theory, into vaccines, into, you know, the viral paradigm. So if without that indoctrination and just the medical system as a whole, as it is now, right, what they call allopathic medicine, I think that's being generous. I don't see it as medicine at all. You know, it shouldn't even have that name. It's really poisoning. So, you know, so I wanted to just show the history of that so-called medicine in our nations and how it pushed out the others that were came before, which were really, it's interesting because they'll call the established medical system institution calls other medicines that have been around for thousands of years, you know, proven to heal and cure people of disease or prevent disease as alternative, right? As if it's like some new crazy thing. And it's always like, oh, now, I mean, we're lucky that we even can buy some of these things still, because that's been a big fight to keep this on our shelves. I know in Europe, it's harder to get herbs, herbal medicines than in the US, for example. But it'll always come with a warning, this hasn't been evaluated by the FDA, which is like, well, because they refuse to even try to evaluate it, you know? So it's like, we don't know anything about this. We know so much. We have the evidence of thousands of years. You know, what do you mean we don't know about this? Everything they're doing is completely new, synthetic, you know, non-biologically compatible with our bodies, proven to be poisonous. So I wanted to just have that background information, which got me into all these stories and different, you know, kind of interesting things, little stories I've added along the way, but also just how the medical schooling works and that indoctrination that happens to good people who go into that field thinking they want to help people, and how it really changes them. And either they leave or they get like jaded and, you know, sort of go through, like, I mean, a lot of them get stuck in it because they have these overwhelming student loans. And if they don't get a job that pays well as a doctor, then they're out. And like you just said about journalism, if you don't play ball and you don't go along with like the dictates from on high about what you're supposed to do in your practice, then you're out. And a lot of these people can't afford to be out, because we're talking about up to $500,000 in student loans, you know, crazy amounts of money. So they end up just, I was just reading a book by Suzanne Humphreys called Rising from the Dead. And, you know, she's kind of come, I think, a long way since then too, but she doesn't question like the virus thing in this or anything, or germ theory. But she did start to question eventually like what was going on in medicine. She calls it the golden handcuffs, you know, the student loan debt and everything. So she finally got out of hers and she left, you know, the hospital she was working at and everything, went to private practice. But this is what happens, you know, there's all these traps and it's designed that way. And so, you know, there are good people, there are still good people working in these fields who think they're doing the right thing too. They've been really conditioned to believe that. And they don't know other options at all. So I think a lot of people too going to see them just don't have other, feel like they have other options, and they think this is as good as it gets, or they believe that it's always getting better and they're, you know, scientists are working hard to find cures and whatever nonsense, you know. But you look at the funding. I try to get people to always focus and go back to like, who's funding this?
Yeah, follow the money. Yep.
Yes, it's so important. It always is. It's always been true. It's still true. This is how corruption works. You know, it's easy. It's really not that hard to uncover. But
I mean, if you just look at your book here, I mean, you could do a book for each section of this, you know, individual books. It's a really comprehensive analysis, just to give people sort of a preview. I mean, cow medicine for the human herd, going all the way back to Jenner's cow medicine. The rise of Rockefeller medicine, from poisoned arrows to poisoned needles, germ theory and the viral paradigm, what really makes us sick, and continuing on, obviously, into the modern era. And I like chapter 7's title, The Trojan Horse and the Four Horses of the Apocalypse, A New Jab for a New Generation. And that's obviously talking about this whole mRNA transition that we're going through. And as you said, a lot of people, they might be waking up to mRNA vaccines now, but there's plenty of people you talk to and they go, oh no, I just have a problem with these new experimental gene therapy ones. Mm-hmm. I still don't have a problem with traditional vaccines. And when you, as you said, if you look through the whole history of this industry, especially medicine and this really, you know, this system that come in and just synthesized nature and sold it to people, and, you know, really didn't, that like they come in to claim that they were the saviors of humanity. But as you said, for thousands of years, all of these things in nature, all of these, you know, drugs, even like nylon and things like that, they still come from animals. They still come from plants. It's just now they own all of that and they synthesize it and resell it to us and put ingredients in it to harm us or to make us addicted so we come back, and to make sure that it doesn't really cure you. It just makes you well enough that you keep coming back for more. And it's just fascinating that most people had so much blind faith in this sort of medical cult for generations, to the point that it really is ingrained now. I think this COVID pandemic has just shown you how this notion of the experts know everything has come into play. But you really go through in this book a comprehensive history of just where the vaccine side of it really starts to become deceptive. And it goes back further than people think. It goes back before vaccines, as you mentioned.
Yeah, the early days of what we call allopathic medicine are things that people nowadays would hear, they read about, they would think, oh, that's ridiculous, barbaric, whatever. So allopathy, so-called, didn't start with Jenner and cow medicine, you know, which is what the word vaccine comes from. It just means cow, you know, cow, vaca, cow. And so it was like bloodletting, you know, using leeches, using really bizarre ingredients from like what sounds like probably tortured animals. There's always been some, for some reason, torturing of animals is essential to our modern system still today, you know, with the science behind all this. They always torture animals. And so they've always, and it seems ritualistic when you start to look at that and look at rituals and blood, you know, magic and that. So there could be some aspect of that. But what it does is it desensitizes and the practitioner, you know, and when you're trained to harm animals first and then people. That's how I see it. But we're talking about like the fat of a puppy and some, you know, other parts of different animals, blend it together. And, you know, like I like this one, the moss from the skull of a criminal who was left out, you know, wasn't buried. That's a really good medicine, according to, you know, the so, I mean, this is what we're coming from. And the thing is, and, you know, and just the surgery, you know, cutting things off, like, you know, the early surgeons would just take a knife. There's a story about a man, I don't think I have this in my book, but there's a great book called Strange Medicine, which is actually a hilarious read, but really disturbing at the same time, you know, taken from actual like annuals of medicine from, you know, hundreds of years ago, written by Nathan. Well, I'm not sure how to say his last name, but it's called Strange Medicine anyway. But there's a surgeon, early surgeon who, some man was complaining of like a lump, you know, growth in his throat. And he comes over to him. He takes his knife out of his pocket and just cuts it off. And the man like just bleeds out and falls dead, bleeds out. And he's like, well, like, oh, well, you know,
well, that doesn't work. Yeah.
Well, I guess, I mean, we got the growth off. So success, you know, success. Like it's about the person lives or dies or is sick or healthy. It's about whether they got rid of the tumors or whatever they see as being wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I do remember hearing stories like that. Like they would just cut people's heads off to get worms out or things like this, you know, or they've got worms in them. Maybe if we just cut their heads off and then sew the head back on, And then they sew the head back on. Well, he's not waking up.
Whoops.
Oh, well, whoops.
Well, maybe we can do some Frankenstein experiments and get him to wake up. I actually had to do a CPR course recently because I'm doing some river tour guide work this summer on the side. And it was really enlightening to me, especially coming at it now. Like, I'd done it once, like in high school, you know, many years ago. And coming back at it now and knowing what I know, it was actually amazing to me. Like, they say, well, I was told CPR only actually saves like 5% of people you do it on. And it's this really brutal thing. Like, you break the ribs, you know, which can cause pneumonia later, other complications. Yeah. But the thing that they said that was really weird is they said, okay, so the person, when you first are doing it on them, could be technically, they go for their, they saw, they called it their first death. Apparently there's like more than one.
Okay.
And so, so the second death, you know, when they have the second death, you know, that's when you shock them, like do a Frankenstein thing on them. So, so it really is like that. I mean, it's so brutal. And I wouldn't want that done to me. I'd rather just die than something come back to life through that kind of torture and like these huge electromagnetic shocks, you know, voltage running through my body to get the heart, you know, like what you're doing is you're just keeping the heart going manually when you're compressing it with the CPR.
Yeah.
And then they bring in the volts and then you get, cause there's a little, if there's a little bit of electricity left, then they can like use that apparently to kind of recharge. But then they, the thing is prognosis. I asked about prognosis for like recover afterwards, you know, even if you like bring somebody back with that, like how long do they live? What's their quality?
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
And they didn't really have an answer for me. Again, you know, teachers, they still don't like when I ask my questions.
Yeah.
They don't have the studies, you know, like, I mean, in some studies I have looked into and they're in my book for like quality of life after being on a ventilator and like prognosis for how long people will live after being on a ventilator or having myocarditis. And it's not good. It's a few years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is what they give you. Oh, we'll give you, you know, radiation chemo for cancer, but you'll just have, you might live a few more years. And but you'll be in horrible pain the whole time and dependent on all of our drugs and surgeries, just torture. This is what happened to a good friend of mine. He died after a year of torture, pure torture at the hands of these like monsters. I'm sorry, you know, but
yeah.
I mean, I don't think they're, I mean, they become monsters because they're so disconnected, you know, they're disconnected from what makes them really human, which is compassion, you know, sensitivity. And this is what's just hammered out of you when you go to med school.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's almost a culture, you know, and as you said, people, whether it's they become an accountant or whatever the case, the culture definitely shapes them, you know, and you definitely see it in this cult mentality that exists in the medical system that, you know, you people do conform and those that don't conform sort of are left on the outskirts. And you explain some of the reasons why, student debts, things like this. And again, it's not necessarily like you mentioned that they do, they are monsters that go in, even though there probably are some that do that. But I guess the money, the conferences that they get to go to, the spa treatments they get to have, and yeah, that culture of just being the medical professional, you know, might create somewhat of an elitist mentality and they sort of just conform to it. And for me, I guess the interesting part is who really created that sort of culture, you know, in this sort of medicine. And for me, I think there's a lot of parallels between what the medical industry is and sort of almost like a management system of a herd, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess vaccines, we see it all the time. From near rural regions here is where my family's from, and I recently went down to see them, and you just see ads all the time, get your new vaccine for your cattle, get your new vaccine for your sheep, this is the latest vaccine. And we've seen that this has been going on for ages, you know, this regulation that we regulate animals. And it always just makes me wonder if the people that created this culture, not necessarily the doctors and everything involved, but the people that did it, is that it's almost in a way similar to a management system of a herd, in a sense, to keep them all jabbed and to keep them dependent and to keep them just nice and secure in our little system, just like a farm animal.
Yeah. And I've made that parallel quite a bit, and definitely by the end of the first chapter, the part called Hurting Humanity, because even back when Jenner brought in this, you know, vaccine, this cow medicine, the people at the time realized the real agendas. A lot, there were a lot of protests, and they called them anti-vaccinists back then. And they said it was like they were being, you know, herded like cattle, lowing cattle, and in the interests of the, they called it big people, those in the pay of big pox. So what we call like big pharma now is big pox, you know, like the smallpox industry, right? So like, you know, we have this kind of limited mindset that sees, you know, we're, and this is part of our conditioning, that we're at the apex of, you know, human history and learning, and they're, you know, the poor backwards people back then just didn't understand science, and they didn't have the science we have now and the technology. They were ignorant, and that's just not true at all. They were always critically minded, you know, clear thinking people, probably more so, who saw these agendas, and they fought against them. They went to prison for them. You know, they were not in favor of these vaccines that they saw were harming and killing their children. And their fellow men, you know, so there were huge protests. And so this is just the same story repeating. And I love to just contemplate that, because I think just to make sure I don't get into that way of thinking either, this kind of egotistical mindset of like, we're better now and we're smarter now and we know we have the internet, you know, it's just such a deception. If anything, we've really been dumbed down. And we have, and here's the point, I think, of cow medicine and a lot of other drugs is to, it's like because the elitists among us with the power holding the purse strings of the world see us as inferior to them in all kinds of ways. And they see us as just something to be managed. And, you know, if they think, and just like cattle ranchers, if they think that the cows are getting a little too uppity or whatever, you know, and they're jumping out of the fields that with going over the fences, then they're going to have to do something about it. Right. And that's what any good, you know, any farmer would do. And so you're like, okay, well, we need to, maybe we'll give them this drug that we're going to say it's good for them so that they'll take it or whatever, or they have, or we'll just force them if they don't take it. And it'll make them more docile and more easily controlled. And with, you know, the herd's getting kind of big, it's not profitable anymore for us. So let's cull some of the members, especially the ones we don't think are producing anymore. They're not, you know, the older ones that aren't really producing milk or meat anymore. We should just cull them. It's too expensive for us, because they see themselves as the owners of our world and are entitled to doing this. And so they just have to use all the propaganda and the, you know, advertising to convince us that to go along with that, that's a good thing. And even to get people to believe that they are just herd members, that their individual rights don't matter, that they shouldn't be thinking their own thoughts, that it's not, it's selfish, you know, they shouldn't want things for themselves. They should just, they should be willing to sacrifice themselves or their family members for the greater good of the herd. You know, and we see this all the time. It's been shoved down our throats, especially in the last few years. And that's, we have billboards out. We're in a rural area too. Billboards all over the place about, you know, doing your part. It even says my turn, California, you know, .gov. Like, it's your turn to get vaccinated. My turn, right? I'm going to do my part, my bit, you know, for the war effort and all this. And we don't, people not realizing the war isn't against the germ. It's against you. You know, this is all, the outcome of all of this is to take away your wealth, take, which is your power, take away your property, is also, you know, your security, take away your health, take away your life. So that's, you know, it's a war. There's just no other, you can, you know, that sounds alarmist to a lot of people, but look what's been happening. Look at the devastation on the economy and on people's livelihoods and their personal lives, you know, and their health. It is, that is the outcome of this war. But yeah, they just see themselves, they actually, a lot of them, I think, don't think that they themselves are evil, bad people the way we view them, like psychopaths. They don't understand. Well, if you're a psychopath, you wouldn't even understand that, because you have no such thing as compassion and empathy. So you just think you're doing what you needs to be done, and you just do it, you know? So, but another way of talking about this would be to say it's a communitarian thing happening, which is like basically what I see as like the herding thing. But it's like they use a lot of words. There's these communitarians are actually that predated communism. The same person founded communism, and it even has a religious status today. There's like a church and everything.
Okay.
And so it's nonprofit and all this. So people don't hear about it a lot. It's like, but we hear the words that they use that kind of outs them. Like they say, and the thing about just even saying communitarian is like sounds like it's not so bad. Oh, it's about the community. But that's the trap, right?
Yeah. It's very like, utopian.
Yes. It's like the community matters, you don't. But if the individual rights are gone, then there is no community. There are no rights for the people when the individual rights are taken and when body sovereignty is non-existent, and that these leaders, these self-proclaimed leaders, can drug you, can put anything into your bodies that they want to, then all of your rights are gone and you have no freedom. So yeah. You just have a pretense of it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's fascinating with those parallels in terms of just seeing how in similar ways that we manage herds, we are managed as a herd as well. And this goes all the way down to, the deeper sort of eugenics agenda and population control on these larger levels that they do, which obviously involves health, and health is a bigger aspect of it, just like in any herd that you have on a farm. But that's one of the things that is interesting to me is, say, for example, Julian Huxley from the famed Huxley and Huxley family. He was a part of, the zoological society and was interested in the study of animals. And then we look at Baller, who is, the head of Pfizer. He went to a Greek university and got his bachelor's in reproductive studies of animals, and then goes on to be the head of Pfizer. And so you look at these questions and you go, hang on a minute, this is very interesting. And one thing that we sort of alleviated to is there's this vaccine in the animal world called the PZP vaccine, and this is used on wild populations of animals when they start to get out of control, when their population or their numbers become too big. And so essentially for, horses or cows, things of these nature, they pretty much just stand there with this sort of like bamboo gun from a distance and just shoot a vaccine into them. And over time, that leads their reproductive capabilities to go infertile, so they don't breed anymore. And it's interesting when you look at the schedule that the PZP vaccine has to be used in these animals, like elephants as well. They have to have two jabs and then booster shots every 3 months or so. And it's like, hang on a minute, if I'm looking at the COVID vaccine, this mRNA technology, we also have to get two jabs and we also have to get boosters every 3 to 6 months, just like this PZP vaccine. And so you throw all of this in and all, as I said, the Zoological Society, their fascination with animal studies, it really starts to bring it home a little bit that on these levels, they really are thinking of those things, aren't they? They're really thinking of management of an entire society of people on this planet as a massive community.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say something about this genetic aspect, these, these gene therapy drugs that, mRNA and everything. And I've started to wonder, I didn't really dive into this in my book just because I haven't studied it enough yet, but I've started to wonder if we haven't been deceived about this model of genetics as well. Just even like what DNA is, how it looks like, how it behaves and all this, because this is pretty recent, '50s, I think. And what's weird to me about that story even is that one of the two men who supposedly discovered the double helix, like his wife had a vision of it in a dream right before he did about what it looked like. I just think that, that it's probably not what they're telling us. And what's interesting to me, though, is that so we get frightened about being genetically modified. I think that's less relevant than just being poisoned, which also affects your, let's say, what you pass on with inheritance, right? Maybe not genetics, right? We call it that. But let's say that, say, when a mother's poisoned when she's giving birth or beforehand, which is happening quite a lot now, that affects the child, right? And the child's health and brain function, especially, right? So in terms of modifying the herd and subduing the herd, I just think it's a new level of poisoning, maybe a little more sophisticated, which is why I wrote like a whole chapter on poisoning, because I think that at its element, that's what we're looking at. And poisoning has long lasting effects, and it can have intergenerational effects as well. So we don't really have, I think like that's kind of a little bit of a slight, you know, like a little bit of like, look over here at this thing and like, you know, smoke screen a little bit. And like, what's really, what really fundamentally is happening is just poisoning. And so now they want to do it to all of our animals that we eat again, just to continue this poisoning that is going to cull a lot of the herd, humans and animals that they eat, and also dumb us down. And make us, yeah, and it make us infertile, so that again, like the future generations, there's fewer, just like you were talking about with the wild populations. And it also could be that there is a self-spreading aspect, which has also been trialed in wild populations, self-spreading vaccines, where they basically, again, it's just poisoning, you know, so they'll throw bait into like the wilderness for animals to eat, which is like what they call a vaccine. And then allegedly, some of those who ate the bait will spread it to other members of their groups to help allegedly protect them from a virus or something. But what is it really doing? Poisoning. It's poison.
That's a brilliant point that you bring up there, because, of course, when we talk in these terms, we're talking within the realm of scientism, aren't we? We're talking within the cult. It really demonstrates how much, as we said earlier, it has ingrained us as humans, you know, because we sit here and we talk about genetics and we talk about DNA, but do we really know what any of these things really mean? I'm not here to deny that these people that have studied this, like, they would know what those things are, right? What they say, that they've mapped out our entire, you know, our brains, and they've found all of the neural wires, and they know everything inside our body. I don't have a doubt that they probably know what something that makes us up is, say genetics or DNA. But this story that they've released about, you know, double helixes, and most of it's junk, and it seems very fairy tale-esque to almost you know, cover what they really know about what we are, what's going on inside of us, who humans are, how we're, again, because we don't even have other terms, how we're genetically programmed or genetically born to follow certain paths. Even just saying that, I'm using their language as well. So it really is a big trap, isn't it? Where, and again, you know, it's interesting you bring up DNA, because I believe that old mate who did come up with it that you're talking about, and his wife had the vision. He was just a member of this elitist Royal Society of London, where that's where they pretty much come together. Thomas Huxley and all of these people.
Jenner.
Yep, exactly. Yep. And they all come together. And that still to this day is pretty much I call it the Vatican of scientism. It's where everyone goes, and whoever's the head of it is really the Pope. You know, and all of their churches are all of the universities, and all of their Bibles are the textbooks. But it all has come from this Royal Society, where they have the oldest book in the world in terms of scientific journals. They've published everything from Newton to all of the great discoveries. Even people like Elon Musk are fellows of the Royal Society. And it really is like this big cult that, again, we can't even speak in terms without knowing what it is. So I completely get your point there. And how do we really ever know?
Right. And I mean, even my book is like, there's a lot of science. I mean, there's a lot of studies that I show, and I do speak with these terms and show it in that way, because people, unfortunately, like they want to hear that, you know, like, well, show me the science, show me that's the evidence, allegedly. Yeah. But, you know, all these science, all these studies are, in, I think, inherently flawed, because you can never really eliminate all the things have like true controls. It just, life is too complex for that, and the environments are too complex. So, you know, it's, I just think the whole thing, in a way, the way that the studies are conducted, and of course they use animals and torture animals, is so limited, actually. And there's, you know, the whole, the world and the complexities of it are so much greater than that. And it's so, you know, this reductionist mentality, this mechanistic view of everything, that we can break everybody apart, you know, reduce them to their components, the neurons, the whatever you want to call everything. But when they're dissecting, as soon as you open up a body, you've altered it. You know, as soon as you put something under a lens, you've distorted it. As soon as, and then they always add dyes, you know, and other chemicals, and you put formaldehyde, and you, you know, so these constant alterations of, and dissections and separations, you know, you can't really understand life that way or understand human life that way. And even all of the scanning technology, again, you're looking through some kind of distortion. And when you scan somebody, you're harming them. So you already are making, you're creating a different environment in their body with that radiation exposure. So what you're seeing as a result is not what it was before. Great you, yeah. You know, so the problem is, it's this need that I think the elitists have, that the psychopaths have, to feel that they are masters of everything, that they can control everything. It's the need to control. And I think that, we need to start removing ourselves from that mindset and to accept more mystery in our lives. You know, accept that there are things we can't comprehend in that way. Maybe you can comprehend it in a different way, but you can't comprehend it through science and dissection and even language. You know, there are mysteries, there are things that we can't speak. You know, it's already lost its meaning once you put words to it. So I feel like that it's helpful to start being more comfortable with that, you know, accepting complexity and mystery, and, you know, just experience things differently. It allows you to open up to like a different realm that is sort of beyond that technical understanding, where things happen like miracles, you know, where healing can happen. Where peace can come, you know, where that, you know, peace can come from. And so I think it is a trap to get into that, the scientism and this, in the, it is like a cult. And I definitely bring that up in my book, that it's a religion and there's a lot of beliefs involved. And the people doing these studies on DNA and on so-called viruses and things are indoctrinated as well. So they may think that they've proved something and can show you that, but what have they actually discovered and proved?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so it's all very tricky. Their experiments don't really go the way that they plan always. Like, even with all the experiments on the brain, I mean, this is like, we're looking at least 100 years of brain research, you know, dissecting the brain, putting electrodes in people's brains, trying to control them remotely, and having a lot of crazy, unpredicted, disastrous results. You know, and maybe that's what they really wanted. I mean, what ultimately happens is people get like a microwave lobotomy. You know, they don't, they have yet to really demonstrate that any of this is good for anybody and that it can help them or even do what maybe they want, like to really control people the way they want to. You know, I don't think that it's as the, you can have, it's not exact, you know, this, they want this exact precision science, but their whole way of looking at everything is so flawed that I think that everything they try to do is bound to fail, or at least it won't be at all what, like, they've told us it's supposed to be, you know.
Of course, yeah, no, that's a great point, because, you know, like, and this is the thing, like, science, people just think that science just started out of nowhere and all of a sudden we went from religion to science. But it's like before the actual, as I call it, the cult come along, this cult of scientism, there was some sort of genuine science, you know, like I can put a bowl of macaroni in the microwave and when I take it out, it goes from hot to cold. It gets the air of that's around it. And I can see that happen. You know, there is observable science, which was assisting the natural mm-hmm. theories at the time, which was assisting some of the wonder. They were using, hey, this is a way that we can use a method to look at the observable world around us. Now, does that mean that we know everything? No, of course not. And then this cult come in and saw that as a perfect opportunity to take over it and say, no, science can explain absolutely everything. Mm. Even the not, you know, the non-observable, the origins, everything, we can do it through this, as you said, flawed system, this scientific methodology and all of this jargon that we're going to create. And there will be no wonder outside of that anymore. There will be, this is the new way of thinking. That was the old way, it's dead, and we move on. And that was their sort of mentality during this mm-hmm. sort of great revolution. And people were back then dumb enough to believe things like the evolution hoax and things like that to really get it pumping and really get it to have a stronghold on society. But you know, there was some good elements to it, but now, and, you know, no one that's alive today or even for generations was in a world before this, but there was a world before this, and they mm-hmm. sort of took that over and have used that to their advantage to control and to just sort of influence people. And it makes you wonder if it was the same characters that did it. They were running religion mm-hmm. for so long, and now there's a new way to control people, but they haven't let up, you know. And for me, it's almost impossible. If you're a human, it would be almost impossible for you to fully be able to comprehend yourself, because you're not the thing that created you. And this was another thing that the scientism cult did, was they sort of eliminated this notion that you are the center of the world and you're mm. you were made in the image of the divine mm. and the world is here around you. It just become, no, you've come from dust and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so now these people think they're the gods and that they can discover everything when, you know, if you're not the thing that created us, whatever it is, then you can never truly comprehend. As you said, everything's distorted under a lens. You do something, there's always going to be changes. But for some reason, this loose industry that's sort of just been held together, if anyone really looked mm-hmm. at it, they'd be shocked to see just how loose it is together. As you said, all the experiments are just bogus, and
mm-hmm.
and here we are today where they've become the most trusted source of authority in the world, mm-hmm. and they're not stopping, you know. Like, we're going into this transhuman era now, and I always draw a lot of parallels, Shannon, between what we're going into and Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, and this sort of advanced medical state where it's not even necessarily a control system out of fear. It's a control system out of like fake consumerism, and they have classes of people that are genetically altered at birth, and we mm-hmm. see that happening with, you know, ultrasounds and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And they have their classes, which are just intentionally dumbed down just to be the working classes, just to be smart enough to push that elevator button, but not, you know, not too smart to be able to question what's really mm-hmm. going on here. And it's a peaceful, joyous, in a true dystopian sense, world that they all live in. And it mm-hmm. seems like that's what they have figured out. Even back then in the late 30s when Huxley was talking about it and his grandfather started mm-hmm. the evolution hoax and was a part of the Royal Society. Mm-hmm. And here we are all of these decades later, 90 years later since that book was published, and that world really is coming in, and that is the perfect sort of system. And it makes you wonder, you know, because there's always this argument in Brave New World, it's like, well, what's better, the savage reservations or this brave new world where there is no fighting, there is no conflict, there is no religion, everyone's just happy? Just take mm-hmm. a soma, Shannon,
mm-hmm.
and all your worries will go away. There's no partners, no one gives birth mm-hmm. anymore, there's no diseases. This sounds exactly like what Elon Musk and Klaus Schwab are telling us with all of yeah. this utopian vision. So I just want to get your thoughts on that. Yeah. You know, do you see how it's sort of this brave new world, and do you think people will rebel against that, or will they love it?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I reread that book in the last year or so, and I have quotes from it in my book. Because when they are in the, it starts with like that lab where they're creating, they're messing with embryos, you know, and they're, it's all test tube babies, like literally.
Crazy, yeah.
and so they mention that the director of this facility is showing students through, and he says, yeah, I think it's called Epsilon, is like the working class that, you know, doesn't need intelligence, just enough, you know, just enough to do what they want. So they said, the key to that is oxygen deprivation at the right moment during development. Yeah. Which I found really interesting, because with the parallels now with like mothers forced to wear masks, you know, pregnant women wearing masks, depriving themselves and obviously their babies of oxygen, being forced to wear masks in hospitals while they're giving birth as well. And this, the whole cord clamping, you know, as soon as the baby's out, they clamp the cord, shut off the blood supply, which is a crucial moment. Like that blood is oxygen. Yeah. The baby's not breathing yet. You know, they say, oh, we need to get the baby breathing faster, so we cut off the blood. It's ridiculous. It's an insane practice.
Crazy.
Provably causes all kinds of brain damage. Still practiced today. Barbaric, horrific stuff they do with the hospital births. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, and actually was just reading how they, there's been some articles saying that, like, you know, they're basically saying that natural birth is bad for babies. C-section is healthier. I mean, ridiculous, right? And just this, you know, that the babies going through the birth canal, they get all the bacteria and everything is good for them. Oh, there could be pathogens in there. Again, germ theory.
Diseases.
So it's actually more sterile. They think the womb is sterile, which is also absurd and has been disproven. There's nothing sterile in nature. In our bodies, anything in nature, there's no sterility. That is death. Like, there's no life. If even in death, even when we die, there's life if you're not embalmed, you know, with crazy chemicals. But even then, there's some kind of life. You can't eliminate it all, and you don't want to. This is all, we need it. We need the microbes. excuse me. So yeah, this oxygen deprivation is really important to dumbing us down. And this is what's happening with children behind masks, which should be child abuse. Absolutely child abuse, you know, unbelievable, crazy stuff. So yeah, oxygen deprivation, all kinds of ways of doing that. And with the 5G, that actually causes oxygen deprivation, because it interferes with the millimeter waves, interfere with oxygen, water molecules. And so this has an effect on us in terms of, you know, being able to breathe fully and getting enough oxygen. So, they figured that out a long time ago. Definitely Huxley knew, and he wrote about it.
Yeah.
And it's just frightening how it's a really hard read for me anyway. It's just a terrible vision. And also hard just because it is really paralleling today more than ever. I mean, I think when people read that in the 30s, they were just like, there's no way, you know, it really felt like science fiction. But look at what's happening with like norms and morality and sexualization of children. Also in the beginning of the book, children are taught to have sex play with each other.
Death conditioning.
Right. And then the kids who don't want to be molested by other kids or by adults or whatever are taken to counselors to have them like examined and drugged because they're not acting normally. You know, we're headed toward that, and it's complete depravity and it's soulless. You know, everything's focused on the getting high from something, the drug, the soma drug, you know, and then sex and constant sex, you know, like love, like relationship-less sex. The movies are all in the book are just like, they call them going to the feelies or something.
Yeah.
Where you get to like it's all sensations that they're artificial. You know, so it's like sight, sound, touch, and it's all like base humor, you know, sex. Again, we're getting closer to that. I mean, that's kind of like the bread and circus kind of we're being fed right these days. It's and then you have what's interesting about the reservation and the natives, the savages, so-called, that are allowed to remain that way, is that they are similar to today's indigenous peoples. They're deprived of their actual culture. I mean, they're kept in like one place and they're given, like, they're allowed to have some of that, but they're poor. So they're hungry, you know, they're poor. And so then you have more, of course, like fighting and so it looks like, well, these people living in this, technological society, advanced societies are more comfortable. And the, you know, that boy's mother, who was taken from there, end up living, you know, in this reservation, like missed it so much, you know, because it was so much more comfortable. She missed being drugged. You know, so she was happy to go back, and her son was like brought up to believe how it was so wonderful. And so when he goes there, he can't handle like the immorality. Yeah. You know, it's like so contrary to like the values he grew up with in his culture. And he ends up like giving into that because of, it's just so relentless. And then he can't handle that he did that. I think he kills himself or something. So it's like, it's a really dark vision of that. And of course it's also meant to program you to think, well, there's only these two options. And obviously it's better to, the technological one. Although at the end they, I don't remember if he kills himself or not, but there's a few dissenters, and at the end they're kind of given options to leave that society and go off and to an island or something and live there, how they want, which sounds great to me. I hope that happens for us.
No, yeah. Well, that's
completely removed from it on an island where I'm not bothered anymore. That'd be great.
Well, that's, and that's the thing, you know, like it's a fascinating tale in that sense, because, you know, we see the very dark ending of, let's say, 1984, where Winston is pretty much tortured into, you know, just complete like brain numbingness, where he just repeats the party slogans. Whereas in Brave New World, if you were to believe that they don't just go off into some room, which I don't think you get any indication through the book that they are a culture like that, that they'll just, you know, you just go in the back room and you'll be murdered behind the scenes. But It really draws these bigger parallels, as if we are going into this Brave New World system that really is just, I guess, built on just this complete management of the herd. It makes me wonder about, you know, the intentions of the people that are really developing these systems, and whether, like you said, whether we will get those options to do that as well. Because if we do get all those options, does that really make it all bad? And this is where we get into the bigger discussion here, just to round out the show. But, you know, we're always gripping with this notion. And, of course, you can perceive the actions as evil and horrific because, as, you know, fellow humans, we wouldn't want that to happen to us or loved ones around us and whatnot. But what's interesting is this new form of eugenics, this Huxleyan eugenics program, it's pretty much all just built on the premise that everyone does it to themselves, you know, like they come and get the vaccines, they come and get the drugs, they're as much a part of the system as anything. And so it makes you wonder, you know, like, is there going to be an option for us to be the savage reservations, to go off on islands on our own and just to live our life while the people have their blissful, soma, Brave New World and chips in their head and everything? Because I think inevitably that'll fail, you know. I think inevitably there is some type of human spirit, and you get little inklings of that through the book, you know, that you know, old mate really loves poetry and he wants to be a poet, and it's not until he meets John the Savage that he understands what poetry is. And, you know, there's little inklings that these people do have some sort of humanity in them. They're just somatized down, and it's like, well, it just makes me wonder. I just to wrap up the episode here today, like, what do you think about this whole notion that even though it is evil and barbaric and stuff, there is this sort of ends justifies the means sort of mentality that maybe things might be better off, and maybe the intentions of the people that are running this, they are doing it with that in mind, even though, you know, as a farmer, you know, a cow on a farm may say that's barbaric what you're doing to us, when the cow, you know, they're just part of a system where we might be saying the same. I'm not saying that I 100% believe this, but this is a really interesting question. You don't hear a lot. So I'm interested, because you've been down many rabbit holes, do you entertain these sort of things at all?
Well, okay. So I'm of two minds with this. One is, I don't think that they really want us to have options, because otherwise we would or they don't want them well advertised, at least, because then people obviously would choose. I mean, if they knew, for example, they're trying to blanket the entire world with these unnatural, non-native frequencies that do change how we feel, changes our state of health, the ability to think, to, you know, our cognitive function. So they don't want any part of the world to not have this. And it's very difficult right now to get away from these signals, like almost impossible. At least if there are places in the world that don't have them, I don't know where they are, or they're in conflict zones, you know, that have other issues going on, impossible to live in. So part of me thinks they don't want that at all. And also, because I think about the, you know, history with the natives who were free, and how, for example, there were accounts of armies, you know, the white, not really white exactly necessarily, but, you know, the colonists who had, like, some of their army members captured by natives who didn't want to come back when they did, like, the prisoner exchange and stuff, didn't want to leave the natives, realized that life was better. And so this became a problem when people, not even when they were captured, but just when they realized, like, the native way was better, they wanted to eliminate that option. And so the reservations really had that effect. You know, when we're put on reservations, we're not really free. And, you know, there's some limitations, too many limitations there. So maybe we could kind of get away from it and be on some kind of reserve or somewhere. But then how free are we? And what is that life really going to be like? But I wonder, too, if we, just the ones of us who are not consenting, and we're finding ways of being off grid and not consenting and not being so involved in the system, if we'll kind of just be left to, you know, as long, it's kind of like homeless populations, which I'm not advocating for, because mostly they're poor and there's a lot of crime and you know, drug addicts. But as long as they're not a threat and to this control entity, then they can kind of be left to their own devices. And I'm not necessarily saying, like, the city's homeless either. Like, you could be, you know, I mean, there probably are people that are living in the wilderness who we just don't hear about because they're not engaging in any of this. You know, they're not doing podcasts. They're not online. Yeah. They're out of the system completely. Now, they're not going to be able to travel on a plane and go to another country and whatever. But how many of us have been able to do that in the last few years, you know, who also haven't gotten the jab, for example? You know, so I don't know if it's just always been that way, that there's these lone kind of renegades who are like, I'm not participating. I'm going to be a hermit somewhere. And they are allowed to exist because they're not a threat to the rest.
I think that's it, you know. Yeah, like, it's the threat element, you know. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lot of, I guess, in this scene, there's a lot of people that they believe that there's going to be a great awakening and we need to awaken everyone and we need to fight back against the system. Whereas you said, you know, like, I would be the same. Like, they would have to know that there are people, as we said earlier, whatever genetics are and whatever they understand about us, they must know that, like you and me, Shannon, those rebellious kids in school, they're not going to conform. And they might go off and do their own thing and be explorers and travelers and just want to be left alone. I always ponder that as well. It's like, well, I'm not trying to take down the system. Like, go have your brave new world. Just leave me out of it, you know? Yeah. And I think maybe there is something to there. Like, obviously, we'll have to wait and see. I think it's too dangerous to really take one side of either camp, like, it's definitely going to happen or it's not going to happen, or are they good or are they evil, because you need to prepare for both sides of the fence. But, you know, I think there is something to it, and you mentioned there at the start, you know, it wouldn't be very well advertised, and I think this leads into a topic we were talking about briefly last time we spoke, and this is this whole topic of, like, sync and numbers and codes in the world. And, you know, like, why do we have the eyes to see while others don't? Why can people look at the space landing module or 9/11 and think that these things are real, whereas people like us can see the bigger joke that's going on there in terms of the moon landing and stuff like this? And it's like, they could have made it better, but they it's almost like they intentionally make these events so that certain people with the eyes to see can see it, and they build this world so people like you and me who want to become journalists, we do learn these things, and it's almost inevitable that we will wake up in a sense. And so I don't know, is there that element where we're given the signs to see, and that's almost like messaging to us? That's almost like saying, here you are, here's the confirmation, you can see. You know, I don't know, it just, these questions really bring into a bigger sort of topic about the malevolence of the people that are running this, you know, like they all act in codes and have their numbers and everything, but we also see the signs. Now, you could say there is a difference between the people that run the show in this matrix and, let's say, the people that are sending the signs. That could be a god or a divine entity, and, you know, you are still controlled by them. But I don't know. I don't know where, and obviously we never can know. But it, what are your thoughts on this whole notion that maybe people like us are given the signs to see and navigate?
Well, it is interesting because what, like, look at you and I as well, like, we're actually trying to tell people. Like, we could just say, well, I can see all this stuff happening. I'm going to protect myself, and I'm not going to get involved with this. And I'm not going to put a target on my back. Because essentially, I am putting a target on my back, and I wonder why. Like, I can't even, like, I feel like sometimes I don't have control of that. Like, I feel such a need to talk and to tell people, and I feel like it comes from a place of compassion and wanting to help. You know, people also need to want to wake up, but at least for those who want to, I can help them. I don't know where that comes from, too. Like, why can't I just be sort of, you know, more selfish, like protect myself, you know, and just live? Because I guess I also see that it is actually coming from a so-called selfish place, too. It's a survival instinct in a way, because we know that we need each other too. We need enough people to wake up to protect ourselves, because we aren't living on islands. We're not isolated from everything. And it seems impossible in a way to do that, more and more so. So to me, if like enough people, other people don't see this, then I'm screwed too. You know, we're going to go down together. So like, I guess there, in a way, there is this kind of selfish motivation, but I don't really have a problem with that, because that's why, again, I think that like individual rights are key to like group rights, right? So but we need people, enough people, to see this so that, you know, we can have freedoms, like any of us who want them. But I don't know why are some things so obvious to some of us and not others, and what makes us different? And what, and, you know, I just really don't, I don't know. But it is an interesting thing to think about. And I know, I don't know how much time left we have. I actually not sure how long you want it to go. So how much more we can get into this.
We can wrap it up soon. I was probably just going to go another 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
We can wrap it up.
Because I know, you know, off air and everything, we were talking about maybe touching on the Matrix kind of thing. And excuse me, hold on one second.
Well, we can lead into that if you do want to lead into that. You know, I think all of it sort of relates, you know, this matrix system that we're in, you know, I think that definitely relates to some of these topics that we're talking about.
Yeah, because I certainly think that I do wonder about these different levels of control and, you know, are we okay. So what first is interesting to me is that this topic of the Matrix has come up a lot in the mainstream as well. So again, like possibly being influenced by this and intentionally. And I think the intention there would be, like, for example, in the mainstream science, and when you get into quantum sciences and everything, there has been a lot of talk in recent years of the possibility that we're living in a matrix that's like generated by like some supercomputer or something.
I have seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that I immediately feel like that's a way, some kind of ploy, you know, to get us to think that way. And so why would they want us to think that way? Well, because then we'll be more accepting of the new matrix that we can, you know, they'll say it's going to be better. So we can, you know, go get on board with the Internet of Things, with smart cities, with augmented reality, as they call it, with using holograms, you know, so that we'll say, well, it's already a matrix and kind of an illusion and some program, and we're just being programmed. So why not, like, introduce our, like, suppose, you know, acting like it's as if it's a group effort and, you know, it's ours and we're billions together, which is not true at all. Again, coming from the same people, the billionaire club that are from the Royal Society as well, as you said, even Musk is. So they want the matrix, right? The new matrix. They want us to get on board with that. A constant, so much out there about augmented reality, you know, making things somehow our reality better. And a lot of, and some, I don't know for what reason, but these people behind all this seem to hate nature, hate the natural world. You know, it's always like, this is a problem, like invasive species, you know, populations need to be controlled. Too many insects, let's kill them.
Kill
the sharks. They're evil predators. Get people afraid of them by, you know, making Hollywood movies. Freak them out. You know, but it's like constantly attacking anything wild, anything natural. And so that it's a crime. Now it's a crime to be a natural person. You know, basically it's becoming a crime. Like, you're not injected with synthetic junk, you know, and poisons. You want to be natural. You want to have natural birth. You know, like, you're a criminal, like, you're a danger to everybody, like, that they've made it like we're dangerous to other people because of germs. And this is why it's so important people learn about the fallacy of that paradigm of germ theory. So I think it's interesting because at the same time, there's obviously a natural order of some kind, you know, and so, you know, it's just that we're being presented it in terms of, in the computer terms, code, you know, software. They're talking about human bodies now as like operating systems in them, and, you know, we're machines, and it's all the same thing. And so then it's okay that we're modified to be more like machines because it's all really equal. So there's definitely a control agenda behind that, is how I see that. But it is interesting that when you are more in touch with the natural world, that you discover this amazing, intricate order, and a kind of intelligence, and also that there's sort of numbers that seem to come up naturally in our lives, that seem to point to some order involving numbers too, which then makes you wonder, you know, well, and you wonder, what is God then, right? Like, because I'm pretty open about what God is. You know, I feel like it can be limiting to say a he and a man or whatever. I mean, I'm not, like, I really have no hang-ups about it, you know, God being a male or female or whatever. I'm really comfortable and secure in myself as a female person, and I don't really need God to be a woman, you know? I don't need God to be a man or a woman or something in between. But is there one creator? Who created the creator? You know, are there multiple creators? Is there just infinite creation? I mean, when we start thinking about infinity, it's like impossible for our linear minds to conceive of. So, you know, then you just get nowhere, I feel like. But somehow this world was created, this existence we're in, whether it created itself or whatever. You know, I definitely think that the concept of Darwinian evolution, again, another Royal Society member, you know, I mean, just, it's all, they're all friends, you know, it's just ridiculous because the timing too, when these notions come out and these concepts, but obviously, like, that concept of evolution, I think I don't think it's at all correct. And it's another just mind control technique, but also just the spinning globe. And, you know, again, like you were saying earlier, to get us to think that we're insignificant, you know, we're just a like we're stardust, and so and everything's so infinite and vast that like we're just so minuscule, we don't really matter. So how dare you think care about yourself? You know, how dare you have like think your thoughts matter? You're nothing, you know, and you're not even the center of the universe like the sun is, and right. So like right there, I have a problem with that, because it does seem like an intention to get us away from like something maybe we're like way more powerful than we have any conception of. And that's why we're such a threat. And if we could understand how to tap into that power and understand how powerful we actually are. Right. And so all these attacks on us to get us away from that, to get us away from what I think we could have in if we were. I mean, imagine like what we've probably been robbed of, like. I'm sure we've been robbed of, like, just by not having had natural, at least in my case, most of us, not a natural birth, you know, drugs involved, you know, being taken away from my mother immediately, all that trauma, you know, trauma birth, so like trauma-based mind control, so right from the get-go, you're being traumatized so that you can be controlled, and then it's just, you know, soy formulas and poisons, one after the other, and the shots especially. Because I think that's the best, most effective delivery method is in the injections. And that's why it's the best weapon for poisoning and control. Yeah. And that's why I wrote the book, really. So, but there are other things, of course, in our water, our food, our air that we're breathing. But what if I wish I could know. I wish I could experience it, you know, and I'm trying to get as close as I can, given like the limitations I have, but in terms of detoxifying and trying to support myself with nutrients, like to regain some of that was robbed from me. I mean, we've been robbed. You know, we've been robbed of what should be our natural birthright to live in the world, in freedom, in the natural environment. Like other, like wild animals should have that freedom too. And like you were saying, they even can't handle that. Like we can't have wild, you know, populations not so-called managed, right? It's good for them. Yeah. We have to manage them, right? And it's like, why can't the wild just be wild? And why can't we be that? And there's this, we've been ingrained with this fear that being wild is dangerous and that we'll become violent. We'll have no moralities, no boundaries, which is just ridiculous. Like animals, wild animals have all those, they have boundaries. They have, you know, they have, they're not violent. they're violent when they have to be. But our culture actually creates these lusts that we don't, I think, have naturally, and pretends that naturally we would have them, and that culture somehow helps us not have them, but it's the opposite. You know, everything is inverted and backwards. So yeah, I guess I think I often just sit, daydream and think, who would I be? What would I be? How would I be if I had not been denied that, you know, for all of us, like all of us are being, we should be angry just because our potentials have been robbed from us. And like you said, with the Brave New World, the elite classes, you know, the more elite you are, the less of that's been robbed from you and the more options you have for what you want to be and study. However, there obviously is this hierarchy and very controlled, and even some of the higher ups have their hands tied, you know. So we could be, who knows? I mean, and of course we know, we have an idea that these elite families and things don't vaccinate. You know, they have like probably have, at least they think, the problem is they may have this cognitive function we lack, but they don't have the empathy and the compassion, I don't think. But like you said, maybe they think they do, but they just see things so differently from us, you know. But I don't, disagree in that I see the actions are harming so much life, you know, and seems so contrary to, like, they don't want biological life. So in that regard, I can't agree that they have any real compassion or understanding anyway of, and again, I don't know why they hate this world. And in that way, if God's the creator of it, they hate God. And they're definitely against that, and they want to be gods, you know, and replace that. I think they're really trying to replace the natural world, if you want to call it a natural matrix, with an artificial one. And that's behind the satellites, the 5G satellites, behind all of this augmented everything. And, you know, and I write about this in my Shotspired book, but they call themselves cyberneticians. Cybernetics was the study of like steering man. Like it comes from the Greek for steering, the word to steer. And so they already were like in the 50s, again, like elitist people, you know, with the Rockefeller families and the funding from them and the in the military as well. And they were coming together in these meetings in the 50s, and they call at the Macy's building. So they call it was called the Macy's, you know, meetings or something. And half of them were never, they're still like classified records that we don't, that were never released to the public from those meetings. But the ones that were released, they talked about the Matrix a lot and about how they finally, they were really interested in like what they call the psycho-civilized man, which is Jose Delgado, who controlled the bull remotely with electrodes and everything. He wrote a book about that, and there were some other books about, you know, that the cyberneticians got really into. And they really thought, okay, well, that's how at least they presented it. Like, we just want to make man less violent and happier, you know, like same thing they're doing now. And but they found that the best way to mind control an individual was not just electrodes in the brain or sensory deprivation or sleep deprivation or isolation or whatever. It was, the isolation and the sensory deprivation were key. Because they showed that controlling man's environment controls man, because we're just inherently linked to our environment, and so, you know, we're dependent upon it. We're linked to it. It affects us when the change of the environment changes us, and so the key they realized was to change the environment, and by doing to do that, they wanted to build a new matrix, and they used the word matrix, This is what birthed the internet. So DARPA, we know, like, you know, this is came out of DARPA, which is the defense, you know, a research project, you know, branch of our military in the U.S., supposedly just as like a network, you know, communications network for the military. But this came out of these meetings with these cyberneticians. They birthed the internet because of their idea of the matrix and creating an artificial matrix. And so we think about it, we've all been kind of sucked into this. And I think it's really interesting that just the language used, internet, World Wide Web. And I know myself that I am sucked into it to some degree as well, because I do research. I'm using it right now. You know, I'm on the email. I'm like, I limit it as much as possible, but I know that it's like still a kind of trap, and it's a weird, you know, because we've been sold on it as a tool, and now one that we have to use. It feels like, you know, to participate in society at all. When it was first introduced, it was optional, and gradually it became required. For everything, for commerce, banking, you know, you name it, like it's the internet, you have to have it.
Exactly.
You have to be involved. And so you think about how much time, if you spend, like the more time you spend in that kind of other world, you do feel like you've gotten lost in a world. You know, there's all these places so-called that you can go. And the more, when you see this with gamers, especially online interactive gamers, they lose sense of, they lose touch with the world outside of that, like the actual natural world. They don't often even know when they're in one and the other. It blurs the line between this. And this is what they want to happen. And they're advertising it even. We've got Zuckerberg from Facebook, now called Meta, you know, advertising the metaverse as this other kind of, you know, game type Sims, you know, world where you can have a better life, where you can, like, your avatar, right? Your avatar. And there's the Avatar Project, 2045, that by the year 2045, supposedly, we're all supposed to live as avatars or even like a hologram. You know, there's these different stages, this the whole transhumanist thing. But even beyond that, in that we'll eventually, our consciousness supposedly could be changed, like moved into a hologram, not even a robot anymore, a hologram, you know, this very weird, tenuous, like type of reality. Like, so it's totally moving us out of the physical into the virtual. And, you know, it's kind of working slowly, you know, a little bit, in that, like, the younger generations who are completely, like, just tethered to this all the time, you know, are losing touch with the natural world and the physical reality. And they're more primed for that kind of change, you know. I mean, I don't know. I guess I hope that a natural event, maybe like an act of God, you could call it, like a good solar flare, might just wipe this all out, you know, and it'll just all fall apart, which would be, I mean, there would be a lot of chaos for a while, and probably some people will starve because, you know, it just will disrupt everything. But ultimately, I think that that would be something that to hope for. I'd rather not have to use the internet, you know. I'd rather not have to be, you know, I enjoy like writing and researching and chatting with like-minded people, but like my preferred, you know, way of living would be like, I don't need to do that. And I would be meeting more with people, you know, face to face. And yeah. So, and I hope that we all can start to see that and like really kind of wean ourselves off of it and realize that it's become a dependency and that it is like it's robbing us of our time, which is so valuable. And I think as you get older, you really start to appreciate that, that is like a serious time suck and on purpose. You know, another way of robbing us of our potentials when you don't have time in your life to spend quality time in the natural world with your friends and family or to develop like anything, like, you know, playing a musical instrument or playing a sport or whatever, creating something, you know, creating something physical and tangible. And that is more fulfilling, I think, than creating sort of another, you know, level of the virtual world, the metaverse, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Man, I suppose we could just keep chatting for like 3 hours on this topic. You completely see your point. You know, these are just some of the ideas that we need to discuss, but
yeah.
I think we'll wrap it up here. I've got some council workers starting outside, Shannon, that are going to get a bit noisy with their whippersnippers once they get closer.
Oh, yeah.
So that might be our cue to start wrapping it up here today. Did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to leave the listeners with before we wrap up?
I don't know, but you just made me think of a friend who I wrote about in Wi-Fi Refugee who said that he has a lot of gratitude towards Bill Gates and these other bastards because they helped wake him up. So, you know, he feels like he's better off from having woken up more. And it's true, as they push this on us so more, these agendas so overtly, you know, and just intensifies, it would contribute to like an awakening, you know, for those who are ready for that and want that. So yeah, I don't know, can we judge them or what? But yeah, but anyway,
it is a big one.
Just things to contemplate. And but I appreciate the discussion, and thanks for having me on. And because that's me. I'm done. That's all.
No,
I've done.
It was a pleasure to have you on. As I said, I wanted to get you on to talk about some of these bigger topics, you know, instead of just, you know, focusing on, even though it is important, EMFs and Wi-Fi and technology and stuff. And obviously that underpins a lot of these things we're talking about. You know, I just wanted to, you know, shoot some info back and forth with you on some of the things that are deeper down the rabbit hole and encompass some of the bigger topics. So I really appreciate it. For all the members out there, make sure you head out and check out Shots Fired. We'll leave a link. Shots Fired, Vaccine Weapons, Medical Tyranny and the War Against Humanity. And of course, some of Shannon's other great books, Welcome to the Masquerade, The Wi-Fi Refugee. We'll leave links to all of the books so you can go check that out. And yeah, just so everyone knows, you know, that you're very well versed and understand some of these deeper pictures that are going on. So I'm sure that they'll all enjoy reading your work and your book after hearing this episode. So thank you, Shannon, again. I appreciate you coming on. We'll wrap it up here. Thank you to all of the full members out there for your continued support of the website and for tuning in. Stay tuned for more content coming soon. Be sure to leave your comments below. And as I said, make sure to check out Shannon's new book, Shots Fired, that is out now. So for the month of June 2023, we'll wrap it up here. thank you to everyone out there, and we'll catch you all down the road. Cheers, guys.
All of us, we were born in this game. They force you to play. They keep in a score of the points that you make. Every person you've met and word that you've said, there ain't no escape from the choices you've made. They revel in a lot of mistakes instead of quality traits. I don't care, I've got to escape. They create every lane that they got you to take. Then they force every turn that they want you to make. They say I'm crazy, shit, I know that. Fighting for my life, I'm trying to get my own back. All this misdirection, grabbing their attention. Head the other way, now I went and made my own map. Gotta ask the man in the sky, is it mostly a dream? Why does nobody see? Got a voice but when voted to speak, to make a choice for a world you weren't chosen to lead. See every trial you want us facing, try put me underground. I got up blazing, so addicted to the coin that you got us chasing. Every single thing we doing is for product placement. Feel a need to speak, found a wrong tree for me to bark up. Never been a fighter but I'll start one. Went and took a life you knew you couldn't pass up. Went from playing God to believing that you are one. Now this'll be the end of it. I'm sick of holding the front up that I'm never dropping. I'm feeling it in my stomach that I better stop it. I've gotten over this ride, so I'm getting off it. Yeah, with all eyes on me, they look but they might not see. I'm running for dear life every night, so you'll find you'll never be getting mine off me. Nah, nah.